Previously unaccused.
I opened the door, and when I looked inside, I knew something was wrong because there was things thrown all over the place. And I said, go call the police.
I mean, it's stuff that I did then that I know I paid for in that 28 years because karma is a beast. You know what I'm saying? And regardless of the fact that I was innocent of this, I still was paying for things that I had done.
I'm Amber Hunt, and this is Accused, the unsolved murder of Retha Welch. Just before William Virgil was to go on trial for the murder of Retha Welch, his defense lawyer made a shocking discovery that seemed to throw the prosecution's case in jeopardy. Robert Patton got a call alerting him to additional files related to the case that he hadn't been given yet. He didn't think much of it at first, he said, because he already had a huge stack of documents. But then he noticed that the letters GJ had been scrawled on all the files already given to him, but not on the new ones that were just surfacing. He started to wonder what the letters meant.
And when I went over there, there was a box, you know, like a liquor box. It must have had 15 files in it, maybe more. Some of them, you could look at them, and they were dead ends, and I agree. But many of them were suspects, including this Becker fella, the boyfriend, and the other one was Isaac Grubbs, who I had represented at least twice before. Once I had to take a truck for a part of my fee. So I knew who the guy was. I knew he was violent because he was always in trouble with the law.
In short, 3 days before jury selection, Patton was given a box filled with information about possible alternate suspects. Suddenly, he realized what GJ meant. It's what they had given to the grand jury. The rest was, well, not.
So what they did is everyone that was related that helped them tie the case back to Virgil, they put that piece of paper in a separate file that was basically the Virgil file. It was marked GJ at the top after they went through it and decided what they were going to give the grand jury or what they were going to testify to at the grand jury.
That grand jury apparently indicted William Virgil on murder charges without ever hearing that anyone else could have done it. That last-minute discovery by Robert Patton delayed the trial for months. It had originally been scheduled for April 18th, 1988, a year and a week after Retha's death. Patton told Campbell County Circuit Court Judge Leonard Kapowski that he needed time to explore this new information. The judge rescheduled the trial for September. Patton had to decide his strategy. His job was to defend William Virgil from the accusation. It would certainly help his cause if he could point to another probable party. But it turned out there were a lot of people on the suspect list, and the police records Patton was given showed that investigators didn't spend much time on anyone else.
Virgil never confessed anything. I don't think he was guilty. It's not between you and me, but
yeah.
I'll tell anybody.
I'll tell anybody that. Yeah.
And I, for a different reason than most people think.
Yeah.
The trial wasn't put together right, and it bothered me at the time. And I said, oh, what the heck is going on here? And of course, my client had told me one story inconsistently, and he had an alibi for where he was the night of the murder.
I recently spotted a post on Twitter that resonated so much with me, I'm tempted to print it out and paste it on my wall. It was from Greta Van Susteren. She's the journalist who defected from Fox, only to have her MSNBC show abruptly canceled this summer. A fan had tweeted to her that he'd started watching her during the O.J. Simpson trial. He applauded how she reported on the case. He wrote, "Even when all evidence pointed to guilty, you remained impartial." Greta retweeted this with a comment, quote, "A jury does not decide innocent or not, but whether a prosecutor has proven beyond a reasonable doubt," end quote. It's an important distinction. You have to look at criminal cases through two very different lenses in this country. We lay people tend to look at innocence and guilt. We don't care as much about what is provable as we do what's true. And we often view the work done by police and prosecutors with the assumption that they're viewing it through the same prism. But they're not. They're trained to look at the case as something they win or lose. The system isn't designed to find out who's guilty as much as it's designed to find someone guilty. And once that conviction is obtained, it's difficult beyond words to get it overturned, even when someone can prove they're innocent. So let's look at the evidence that condemned William Virgil to prison. First, I'll give an overview of the prosecution's case, sort of my bullet point version of their opening statement that lays out the case so you know what ammo they were armed with. It'll feel like a lot of information at once, but I want you to get a sense of how overwhelming the prosecution's case likely seemed to onlookers at the time. Generically, the evidence fell into three categories: physical, eyewitness, and biological. More specifically, they had two bloody shoe prints, one on the bathroom tile and another on the back of a rug, that they argued were similar to Virgil's shoes. They had, quote, negroid, end quote, hairs, both head and pubic, that they said were microscopically similar to Virgil's hair. Aretha, you might recall, was white. They had testimony from some of Aretha's friends that Virgil had stolen one of her credit cards and used it to buy clothes. They had testimony from a woman named Sue Daniel, an on-again, off-again girlfriend of Virgil's, who said he tried to get her to help him with the murder. They had Aretha's boyfriend, James Becker, saying he saw Virgil outside of Aretha's apartment on Thursday, 4 days before her body was discovered. And, arguably the most damning of all, they had a jailhouse informant take the stand to say Virgil told him in gory detail how he committed the murder. It's a pile of circumstantial evidence, but man, it's a big pile. So let's dig through it. The investigation was headed by a Newport police detective named Mark Brandt. At just 31 years old when Aretha died, he was one of the highest-ranked homicide detectives the city had. Aretha's case would be one of the last he would investigate for the department. In the early 80s, Brandt had done undercover work, witnessing prostitution and underage female employees. His work then helped lead to raids on four city bars under then-Chief Dave Williams, the guy credited with cleaning up the police department. Brandt's subsequent work was along similar lines. He cited a 23-year-old woman for violating the city's nude dancing ban, for wearing a costume that he said, quote, allowed a view at the bottom, end quote. By 1984, when he was 28 years old, Brandt had risen in the ranks to sergeant. He was a decorated officer who handled a lot of Newport's high-profile cases, kidnappings, fatal arsons, murders. In the course of 2 years, Brandt had been shot twice, once in the chest. So maybe it wasn't surprising when, less than a month into heading the Aretha Welch investigation, he left the police department for good. In fact, he left policing altogether. He took a job at Fifth Third Bank, which is where he was working when it was finally time to testify in Virgil's trial. He now works at the Campbell County Detention Center in Newport. We reached out to Brandt to talk to him about his work on this case. Calling Mark Brandt. This is the second phone call, at least.
Hello, this is the Brandt. We're not able to get to the phone right now, but please leave a message and we will return the call.
Hi, my name is Amber Hunt. I'm a reporter with the Cincinnati Inquirer, calling for Mark Brandt. I left a message a few months ago. I'm following back. Brandt hasn't responded to our attempts to reach him. He had been one of the first Newport officers to arrive at Aretha's apartment after the co-worker found her body. One officer spotted men's footprints and blood and on the backside of a rug and more clearly on an otherwise clean tile on her bathroom floor. It had the potential to be crucial evidence. That footprint had a pattern to it, a swirly design that Detective Brandt thought surely could be unique to a certain brand of shoe. Someone, it's not clear which officer, snapped a photo and that's it. That's not what should have happened. Even someone who's just watched Forensic Files knows police should have kept the tile as evidence, prying it from the apartment bathroom floor so that it could be properly measured and analyzed. Short of that, they at least needed to include something in the photograph for scale. Instead, they shot an image of the footprint and were done with it. Brandt eventually realized that more should have been done with the footprint, but by then, it had been scrubbed clean. In cross-examination, Patton asked Brandt about the police work done at the scene. Patton, wouldn't it have been better to chip up and remove those tiles? Brandt, looking back at it now, yes, sir. It's obvious that it would have been a better decision to do that. That he flubbed this footprint evidence matters, especially when considering what happened the first time he met William Virgil a week after Rita's body was discovered. At that point, Virgil had just been taken to jail for nothing more than leaving the state of Ohio without permission, a violation of his parole. Here's Virgil describing what happened next.
I got out the hospital, I think I went. I go to New York, I think I did. Came back, reported to my parole officer, and they arrested me for allegedly being out of state without permission, which I knew I had been out of state at two different states. You know, so I didn't know which one it was because she didn't say. Right.
Okay.
And so Mark Brandt came in there and he sat down and started talking to me. And he told me his name, but he didn't say anything about, you know, I knew he was a cop, you know what I mean? But he didn't say anything about a murder. He just asked me straight off the top, when was the last time you was in Kentucky? I was like, who is this dude? You know, I'm sitting in jail for being out of state without permission. If I'm going to beat this, I'm surely not getting ready to admit to you that I've been out of state. You know, so I said, man, I'm in Kentucky. I ain't been in Kentucky. You know, then he pulled out that picture of me sitting in the dining room, you know, at Rita's. And I said, well, what is this about? Then he told me that she had been murdered. And, like, I was like, you know, I think I sat a few minutes and didn't say anything. You know, then he started asking me a bunch of questions. I asked him, you know, where was I, this one. Automatically being, you know, living that lifestyle, I'm like, okay, now I'm a suspect in this crazy stuff.
Virgil hadn't heard yet about Rita's death. After a few minutes of shock, he said he asked what questions Brandt had for him. He wanted to cooperate, he said. Then Brandt noticed Virgil's shoes, white Nike tennis shoes. He asked to see one, and Virgil obliged. According to Brandt's trial testimony, the officer then said out loud, "This looks an awful lot like the footprint I saw in Rita's bathroom." From Virgil's telling, everything was going fine until Brandt started making an impression of the shoe in front of him.
He asked me what size it was.
Okay.
I said, man, it's 10 and a half. He said, well, can I see one? Yeah, all right. I figured he was looking in there to see if I was telling the truth about the size.
Right.
You know, and so then when he got to gonna press it down on that legal pad he had, I snatched it.
Yep.
You know, I was like, nah, you don't do that. Plus, this interview is over.
And he testifies about this, and it makes it sound then that you're being combative, that you're not helping the investigation.
I mean, if he had a warrant, you know, and that says that he could seize my gym shoes according to the law, then I would have took my gym shoes off and gave them to him. I didn't care.
But you know, he was literally taking the shoes.
Yeah, I mean, he left, went and got deputy sheriffs from the Hamilton County Deputy Sheriff's Department in the county jail to help him take them.
Yeah.
You know, and he because he was by himself.
In trial, Brandt described the scene as proof Virgil was a bad guy, that he didn't want to cooperate with investigators. But when I read it, I envisioned something different. I pictured a guy walking into an interview expecting questions about leaving the state. Before he knew it, he was broadsided by questions about a murder and told that the very shoes on his feet pointed to him being the killer. Brandt testified that Virgil was furious. He said, quote, I thought that there was going to be a physical confrontation in that room, end quote.
So with the shoes, finish the scene for me. You walked back barefoot in your socks?
Yeah, I walked around jail for 2 days.
In socks?
Mm-hmm.
So when did you finally get new shoes?
A couple days later, my father brought me some.
Okay.
Yeah.
Virgil had just left prison 3 months earlier. As we've discussed, he had been housed in Chillicothe, which is about an hour and a half southeast of Columbus. Rita made regular trips as part of her ministry to the Campbell County Jail and the prison in Lebanon, but she made special trips to see Virgil in Chillicothe, which was 4 hours there and back. After Virgil was picked up on the parole violation, ostensibly for leaving the state, he was shipped to Lebanon, and it's while he was held there that his path crossed with another inmate who would become a star witness for the prosecution.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even though Mark Brandt had screwed up documenting the footprint on the bathroom tile, that print and the one on a rug inside Rita's apartment still played a huge role in trial. Prosecutor Carl Houston Ebert, nicknamed Hoot, told jurors in ominous terms about the prints in his opening statement. One of the prints, he said, was in blood, and Kentucky State Police determined the blood to be human. Ebert told the jury, quote, "You will see for yourself the make and size of those shoes as compared with the footprint that was found on the rug," end quote. In short, he implied that the prints matched, and jurors would see that for themselves. He failed to mention that even his own experts could only give tepid endorsement to this supposed match. The shoe prints appeared to be from a tennis shoe, and they appeared to match each other, meaning both were likely left by the same person. Virgil did prefer tennis shoes and often wore his. The footprint on the tile was useless because lab technicians had no way of knowing at what angle it was photographed, so it was impossible to determine a size. The rug print was a bit better, but parts were smudged. A prosecution expert said the print seemed similar to the pair pulled off Virgil, but that she couldn't be conclusive because the part of the print with the most potential to be unique was the part that was the most smudged. In the end, the footprints weren't that damning when you look at the testimony, but that's not how they were summarized in opening and closing statements. My producer, Amanda, and I recently talked with current Newport Police Chief Tom Collins about the case. He wasn't chief back in 87, but because the new developments have occurred on his watch, he's read up on the case and has inside info related to the investigation. He gives those footprints a lot of weight. Collins has no qualms in saying the jury got it right when they convicted William Virgil.
If you got my footprint on Mars, and I tell you I wasn't at Mars, how did it happen? It went the way it seemed like it should have went. Now, I wasn't on the jury. I wasn't a prosecutor. I wasn't there as a policeman at the time. But the old, and I hate the cliche, but if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, you know, it's probably a duck. And I'm going to tell you everything that those guys looked at that day, everything everybody was told to them, all this stuff evidentiary-wise, sure in the world, pointed to exactly what they done. And if you got to view it, there's no way in the world that you would have ever come up with any other explanation or any other verdict than what was there.
You might notice that Collins is clear in his conviction and yet a little guarded. He has good reason. William Virgil is suing Campbell County and the Newport Police Department for wrongful imprisonment. Collins is walking a line, trying to be candid while not saying something that might be held against his department at the civil trial. Still, he says he welcomes the looming trial because he thinks it'll clear the department altogether.
If we have a real justice system, it'll happen in the civil trial. And I believe in that wholeheartedly because things always happen for a reason. And you don't just get away with murder, very rarely. And I really believe, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe in what we've done. Because I'll tell you in a civil trial once again, and I'm being repetitious, but there's going to be things come out, there's going to be things you talk about that you're not held to that standard.
He's right about standards. Judges in criminal trials are much less likely to allow police to talk about some leads that maybe turn out to be flimsy. But in a civil case, a judge might be more lenient to allow an officer to explain why he chased this lead or that. As of this recording, the civil case is in the deposition phase. Witnesses are being interviewed under oath. A trial date could come yet this year, but we aren't holding our breath. Still, we're eager to learn what's said in the depositions. Some of what's asked will no doubt be reminiscent of bits of the original trial, because Patton, the defense lawyer, did take officers to task for their process. At one point, he asked Brandt, quote, "Is it not true that good police procedure calls for you to follow down as many of these leads as you can, even though they may lead you nowhere?" End quote. Brandt replies, quote, "It is my understanding that the best procedure is to follow the strongest lead and then go with the next strongest lead," end quote. In other words, you stick to the theory that seems most plausible until that theory falls apart. Only then do you look at other possibilities. The Virgil theory never fell apart for police. A few state experts took the stand to describe hairs collected from Rita's body and apartment, and a few of those hairs were microscopically similar to Virgil's. Granted, there were other hairs there too that were decidedly not Virgil's, but those were glossed over in trial. There were hairs from African Americans, a few from Caucasians, and at least one from a dog, despite Rita not owning a pet. The way hairs were compared back in the day was completely visual beneath the microscope. You would take a known hair sample, like one plucked from William Virgil's head, and eyeball it in comparison with an unknown sample, such as a strand pulled from the nightgown Rita wore when she was killed. A 2009 report in the National Academy of Sciences called the technique highly unreliable. It's still used in courtrooms today, but it's better studied now and is hammered hard by defense lawyers, for good reason. Nearly one quarter of DNA exonerations have involved faulty microscopic hair analysis, according to the Innocence Project. In 2015, the FBI posted an explosive report on its website with the headline, "FBI Testimony on Microscopic Hair Analysis Contained Errors in at least 90% of Cases in Ongoing Review." Extrapolate that, and it means that any given trial with hair comparison testimony has a 1 in 10 shot of being right. In 2000, the method of hair comparison shifted as mitochondrial DNA testing came onto the scene. It's because of the DNA testing that we're even able to find mistakes in the eyeball comparisons today. In short, that hair comparison testimony in Virgil's case is basically useless by today's standards, but it helped get him convicted 30 years ago, as did an ex-girlfriend with an axe to grind. Sue Daniel was one of the 6 or 7 women Virgil was seeing at any given time. For the record, the police documents misidentify her as Sue Daniels, which made it difficult to track her down. Her testimony was full of contradictions, and her motivation was questioned even by the prosecution. She admitted on the stand to having attempted to both shoot and run over Virgil at various times in their relationship. She also acknowledged being mentally unstable and addicted to drugs. She wavered time and again over whether Virgil was the killer, and yet she reportedly told her probation officer that her boyfriend planned to kill someone 3 weeks before Rita died. More than that, she said Virgil tried to get her to help. If this happened, it would be huge. But I can't ask Sue Daniel about it because she's dead. I tried to nail down whether the story she told 30 years ago was substantiated at the time.
Headline is, warning of nurse's murder ignored. Several days before Newport, Kentucky nurse Retha Welch was killed, a Hamilton County probation officer was warned that the murder would take place. But the probation...
It was reported at the time that a girlfriend of William Virgil's supposedly told her probation officer that he intended to kill someone. John D. Collins, no relation to the current police chief, was the head of the probation division. He was quoted in some articles as saying the probation officer didn't take Sue seriously because she was a habitual liar.
The probation officer received the report several days before the murder, Collins said. But Collins said the officer, whose identity he would not release, discounted Miss Daniels' claim because she had a history of lying. Collins said, quote, he made a judgment call on her alibi. Obviously, in hindsight, he did not give the claims the credence it should have been given, end quote.
After Retha's death, the system was overhauled to mandate that any potential threat be reported, period. The probation officer's name wasn't released at the time, but I found it mentioned in an unsuccessful civil suit filed by Retha's family. The allegation in the suit was that Sue Daniel told probation officer Bill Wilson that Virgil had plans to kill a church lady across the river. Wilson didn't alert his higher-ups, according to the suit, and Virgil followed through on his plans. The suit was dismissed for a combination of legal reasons involving governmental immunity and statute of limitations. I tried to track down Bill Wilson, but as you can imagine, I would be hard-pressed to find a more generic name. I haven't been able to track down the right Bill Wilson yet. I did find, however, that by 1990, it seems he had left the probation department and hired on instead at Crossroads, a 10-week probation program designed to give offenders more hands-on rehabilitation and job training. In an Inquirer story, the Bill Wilson at Crossroads says he's a 16-year probation officer who was getting burned out and needed a change, hence his new job. Because Wilson's name hadn't been released in connection with Retha's high-profile murder case, the reporter who wrote the piece on Crossroads had no way of knowing that the real reason Wilson changed jobs was likely more complicated. Trial testimony makes things even more fraught. Sue Daniel said her relationship with Wilson wasn't restricted to the office. Patton pressed her to elaborate, and she said she sold drugs to her probation officer and had some kind of friendship with him. Patton, so that's not your normal relationship with probation officers. Sue Daniel, no, it's not. It's tough 30 years after the fact to track down personnel records. Piecing together what happened here is even tougher because the matter wasn't thoroughly reported at the time. I have for months been sending emails and making phone calls looking for any information about just what happened here. What I can tell you is that while Chief Probation Officer John Collins admitted to the press that one of his subordinates got word a woman might be killed, he did not mention that the same probation officer had been meeting inappropriately with the informant and buying drugs from her. Wilson didn't testify in trial that he ever received that life-threatening information about Retha Welch. John Collins quietly retired on the eve of Virgil's scheduled trial when Sue Daniel would testify about the whole mess. The woman described as a habitual liar by law enforcement got to tell all about the supposed encounter without corroboration.
This is your last chance to save 65% on a full year of BODi. I'm Carl, co-founder of BODi. That's B-O-D-I. And I want to help you lean into your decision to start working out and eating better. Right now, if you sign up for a one-year subscription to BODi, I'll give you 65% off. Look, I know it's not easy to get fit and lose weight, especially if you're trying to figure it out by yourself. But we make it simple. Just follow a program for 20 to 30 minutes day by day and lose 5 to 10 pounds a month. We have over 120 120 programs that have been tested and proven to work, and almost 300,000 five-star reviews in the App Store to prove it. Body also has complete eating plans and thousands of healthy, delicious recipes. So stop guessing and start seeing results with Body. And let me give you 65% off right now so you save big on the app that CNN underscored named Best Fitness App. But the sale ends this week, so don't wait. Sign up for a year of Body and save 65%. Just go to body.com. That's B-O-D-I with an I.com.
Because no one else substantiates Sue Daniels' claim in court that she warned her probation officer about Reatha's murder, we have to look at Daniels' credibility as a source. From her own testimony, she was on four separate psychotropic medications. She had endured a severe head injury and a car accident that caused her to wear a hat in the courtroom. She hadn't been employed since 1982 and had a history of prostitution and drug abuse. She loved Virgil and at one point was pregnant by him, though she said she miscarried that baby after being beaten on the street by someone else. She wrote Virgil letters about black magic and his magnetism, and she wasn't pleased about his relationship with Reatha Welch. She alternately said she had barely spoken to him since his arrest. He'd called just once and never wrote her a letter. And yet she testified that he proposed marriage to her so she wouldn't be able to testify against him. Sue said Virgil asked him to help her murder Reatha in February. Sue told Bill Wilson, but no one else. Virgil's plan was to slash Reatha's throat and steal her Cadillac so that he could take Sue to New York to buy cocaine. Patton, did you ever try to run over Mr. Virgil with a car when you were mad at him? Sue, that's very possible. Their relationship was complicated. Here's Virgil's lawyer, Elliot Slosar, who works with various innocence projects. We've talked to him numerous times, in Newport, on the phone, at his office in Chicago. This conversation happened to be at the Cincinnati airport, where he met with us as he readied to board a plane.
You read her testimony and you're sort of like, none of this makes sense. You know, this it just doesn't seem real. There's nothing to verify it. Here's this person with an obvious motive. She's upset at William. She's upset at William because he was, you know, apparently having, you know, relationships with other women. And she wanted to get back at him.
I wanted to talk to someone with legal smarts, but who was more objective about this particular case. So I reached out to Colin Miller, an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina's law school. Podcast aficionados will know him from Undisclosed, which he co-hosts alongside Robia Chaudhry and Susan Simpson. He also appears regularly on another podcast called Crime Writers On, in which host Rebecca Lavoy nicknames him Legal Siri. It's a fitting nickname. If you've got a legal question, there's a good chance he knows the answer. Miller reviewed the trial transcripts and other documents for us. He also unearthed on his own a lawsuit Virgil filed behind bars. By the time we chatted, he was well-versed in the case. Okay, can we talk a little more about Sue Daniels? She was a really interesting character to me. Was she familiar to you? Have you seen that type of character in other cases?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a person who, while implicating the defendant in a certain sense, also, well, seems to have some mental issues, seems to have some drug issues, and herself admits to trying to drive the defendant over with her car. So there's certainly a number of ways in which her testimony is questionable.
I asked Virgil what he remembered about Sue.
Sue's testimony was pretty interesting. To be honest, I'm a little surprised they put her on the stand, but she described having shot at you and run you over. So
no, she didn't run me over. She missed.
She missed. Okay.
But I know she said, damn. But yeah, she did try that once. But Sue was a prostitute. And Sue was a drug addict and an alcoholic mix. And then she was nuts once she used to drink 40 ounces. You know what I mean? She's just not the one that you really should be with. but like I just got out, so she'll do.
In case that's not clear, he's saying she had problems with drugs and drinking, habits she admitted on the stand, but he probably wouldn't have dated her had he not just been sprung from prison. But she liked him, and he decided she'll do. He says he knows why she lied on the stand. She had broken into Virgil's father's house and stolen some things. She was on probation for it and had been nabbed for something else, so she violated that probation. He believes she lied to get leniency on the probation violation.
Were you not worried much about her testimony?
No.
I mean, honestly, like, it
I mean, I knew a probation officer was going to get up a dude that she was tricking with, so.
And the probation officer is the one she supposedly told that you had a conversation, would you help me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was just part of it. I mean, I knew him. He'd been in the old apartment 2-3 times a week. So,
it's
I mean.
It's a great system.
Oh, it's worse than what you really think it is. I mean, if you turn all that up, take this off, I can tell you, man, it's ridiculous.
I sense that Sue Daniel had a story to tell. I wish she were alive to tell it. One reason I suspect this is because there's a mugshot in the police file of a man named Tommy Lee Burgess. But I couldn't find any information on this man elsewhere in the file. From the looks of it, it could have been an errant photo accidentally dropped into the wrong case file. But then I did a background search on Sue Daniel and found that Burgess, at some point, lived in the same house. I don't know if it was at the same time, but they, at some point, both lived at the same address. I have trouble believing that's a coincidence. I've tried to find Burgess, but haven't succeeded, yet, anyway. I found record of him having tallied mostly minor offenses in the Hamilton County court system, which is home to Cincinnati. Safety belt violation, driving without a license, that sort of thing. There were some drug charges, too, including two that landed him in the more serious state system. One of those charges was from 1985, so before Aretha was killed, but after she had started ministering prison inmates. The second state conviction came in June 1987, 2 months after Aretha died. I don't know why his mugshot was in her folder or what his connection is with Sue Daniel. It could be worthwhile to know. So here's where we stand now in Aretha's investigation. The hair evidence is likely bogus. Detective Brandt is putting a lot of stock into the shoe prints, but this evidence is particularly iffy. A major witness is dealing drugs to her probation officer, and someone with ties to Daniel is deemed interesting enough to be included in Aretha's file, but not enough apparently to be investigated. Police still consider Virgil the strongest suspect, so there's no need to look at others. And we haven't even talked yet about Aretha's boyfriend or the jailhouse informant. Next time on Accused.
I mean, I was right there with him.
Yeah.
And I saw the guy. I don't know if it was that guy that they saying that he might be the wrong person with the DNA or something, but I saw a guy with a hoodie and a sweatsuit there.
This is a special project by the Cincinnati Enquirer and Cincinnati.com, reported and narrated by Amber Hunt, edited by Amy Wilson, produced by Amanda Rossman and Phil Didion. Music was composed by Andrew Higley. Kimberly Armstrong assisted with research. For photos, documents, and more, go to accusedpodcast.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.